Hi, everybody. My name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm also in Al-Anon also. I just want to tell a little story. I woke up this morning experiencing this amazing bliss, and it lasted about 5 seconds. because then I started thinking, and I started thinking about what happened the night before, when I drove my car home, and it got messed up, and I had to call AAA, and AAA came out, and they weren't able to fix it. So then I got all this stuff going on, and I go, let me meditate. So the meditation went something like this. I'm one with God, and I'm abundance of his love. what shop should I take my car down to? The Nissan Sentra shop, or should I go around the corner? I'm one with God. What if they can't fix it? Do I have to have a rent a car? Where am I going to rent a car? I've never rented a car in Concord. So, and 4 hours later, my car is still sitting there, but at least I have a rental car. I just closed on a house, buying a house this past week. And it wasn't my first one. My discontent has bought and sold a lot of houses in the last 15 years, and I made my realtor a lot of money. but during this process, there's going to be a lot of work to be done to it. So, you would think it's one of the most joyful times of my life, but I got to tell you, it's been one of the most stressful experiences of my journey. What color paint should I use? What kind of carpet should I get? What kind of laminated flooring? Should I get wood? Should I do this? Should I do that? And then about a week ago, I started thinking, gosh, I never had these issues when I was homeless. I've had a lot of experiences with the power of prayer. And one of them was when I was about 2 years sober. it was Easter Sunday, and if some of you may or may not know, I work out at the ball games. I work at the Giants and the A's games. And this one particular day, it was Easter Sunday, I was having brunch at a friend's house in Pleasant Hill. And then I was going to leave to go to work. And where she lived, there was two ways of getting on the freeway. One, if you turned left and got on in Pleasant Hill. The other, if you turned right and got on Lafayette. Now, 99 out of 100 times, I would have turned left to get on in Pleasant Hill, because this is what I know. And then curiosity just, let me try going this way. Let me go right. So I'm driving over and going toward the freeway. And all of a sudden, this deer jumps out in front of my car, and I hit it. And I thought, oh my gosh, the deer just wobbled over to the side, and I pull over, and then I don't know what to do. And so all of a sudden, this guy comes, driving on his bike. And he pulls over, and I told him what had happened. He said, well, why don't you just call the Humane Society? So I said, good idea. So I went back to my friend's house, finally got a hold of somebody. It was Easter Sunday, at the Humane Society, and they said, don't worry, we'll send somebody out. And I'm thinking, great, And this whole time I'm thinking, they're going to save the deer. And so I go back to where the deer was at, and there was these two police officers there. One in a police car and one on a motorcycle. And I had told them what had happened. And they said, don't worry. we've called up the Humane Society and they're sending somebody out. And I'm thinking, great, they're going to save the deer. So I asked them, what are they going to do when they get here? And they said, well, they'll put the deer to sleep. And it's like, no, wait a minute, you got to save the deer. And it's like, no, this happens on this road a lot, what happens is the deers get hit and they have to come and put them to sleep. So, I'm devastated. I'm 2 years sober. I'm feeling feelings for the first time. And then I'm devastated. And then, I asked them, where's the deer? And they pointed over to the side, and there was this high grass and the deer was just, laying there. And I asked them, can I go over and see him? And they said, yes. So I go over to the deer and I just see the deer laying on his side and his eyes are open. And it just pierced my soul. And I can feel this deer dying. And then all of a sudden, I got down on my knees and I prayed to God, God, save this deer. Save this deer. And what I'm thinking is, kill him instantly so he doesn't have to suffer. And it's like, save this deer from its pain. save this deer from its pain. And all of a sudden, this deer got up on all fours, ran over, jumped over this fence, and ran up to the hills. And the two policemen came over, what happened? What happened? And I said, I prayed. You know, and that was just such an amazing experience for me, you know, in the power of prayer. In the power of prayer. You know, anyway, just a little bit of what it was like. You know, I came into these rooms. I came into recovery a low bottom drunk. The last 6 years of my drinking, I was homeless and out in the streets. And during those 6 years, I'd gone through 11 programs, hundreds of detoxes and shelters, you know, and it all started off at around the age of 13, splitting a six pack with a buddy that I grew up with in San Francisco on a Friday and Saturday night. But I also, you know, the feelings that I had when I was growing up, I was very insecure, had very low self-esteem, and I had an overwhelming fear of people. You know, and I truly believe, too, that I was affected by the disease of alcoholism long before I picked up that first drink. I was affected by my dad's drinking, you know, and there was a lot of screaming and yelling and fighting in our house. You know, and I just all these feelings, you know, of insecurities and fear and worries and everything, and when I started drinking, all that magically went away. And what alcohol basically did for me was it gave me a feeling of okayness deep down inside, and I chased that for the next 18 years of my life. You know, and I never saw the disease of alcoholism coming. You know, it went from a Friday and Saturday night to splitting my six-pack to getting my own six-pack on a Friday and Saturday night. You know, and back then when I drank to get drunk, and when I woke up the next morning, I woke up with a hangover, and I found that magical cure for that hangover, which was to drink again. So slowly but surely went from Friday and Saturday nights to Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, to Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and Mondays. You know, and in AA, they talk about the invisible line, and the invisible line for me was it went from wanting to drink to needing a drink, and I needed to drink morning, afternoon, and night, 7 days a week. You know, and it just kept progressing and progressing, you know, and in my journeys, you know, I always had this overwhelming feeling or need to have somebody take care of me, to have somebody love me. And I found somebody, and her disease was she had an overwhelming need to take care of somebody and to love somebody. And believe me, it was not a match made in heaven, but it did keep us together for 3 years, you know, and in this relationship, you know, we ended up having a son together. And after our son was born, she thought that San Francisco and everybody that I hung around with was the problem, so that we should move to Concord. And it sounded like a great idea to me. So we moved out to Concord, and there's a saying in AA, wherever you go, there you are. And I carried my alcoholic self right along with me. You know, and I was doing things like on Friday and Saturday nights, I would go to San Francisco and drink with my buddies at the bars. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I would call a taxi to take me home to Concord and be pounding on a door and having her to come out and pay the taxi cab driver, you know, and it was just stuff like that. And, you know, after about 6 months of this, she had enough of me and she threw me out, and that devastated me. Because this is the person who I thought was going to take care of me for the rest of my life. And so what I did at that point was I moved back to the other person who I thought would take care of me for the rest of my life, which was back to mom's house. You know, and at this point, too, I got to say that if I wasn't doing suicide drinking before, I started doing it then. You know, I became totally unemployable. You know, I was at my mom's house. I locked myself in my bedroom there. It was me, a little 5-inch portable black and white TV, and my bed. My mom couldn't have any alcohol around the house because I would find it and drink it. She had to put locks on her bedroom door because I constantly went into her bedroom to steal money to go drink with. You know, and a person could only have put up with so much of this. You know, and after about 7 or 8 months, she had enough of me and she threw me out. And you know, just a little plug for Al-Anon. When I was about a year sober, you know, I realized, you know, all the pain that I caused my mom, you know, through my drinking and everything. And I asked her, where did you get the courage to finally say no? She said she went to one Al-Anon meeting. And thank God she did. Thank God she did, you know. You know, and that started the next 6 years of being homeless and out in the streets for me, you know. And in a big book, it talks about the alcoholic life seems like the only normal one. And for me, I could not imagine my life any different from sleeping in bushes. You know, the one thing that's astonishing, too, is that, you know, here I am sleeping in bushes, totally unemployable. But as long as I had a bottle of vodka next to me, I was okay. I was okay, because what alcohol did for me was it erased my circumstances. It just erased it. I just had that I'm okay, you know. And finally, on December 9th, 1991, I woke up at Ellis Park. I woke up in this bathroom in this park in Concord. And when I woke up that morning, I had no idea that my life was going to take such a profound change. And I had no idea that it was going to be the last day that I was going to drink. But what happened that morning was I you know, and looking back at all this, I can see God's hand in everything, Even that last night that I drank, you know, because I remember sleeping in that bathroom, and I had gotten some money from this church where I would periodically go up and ask for a handout, and they would give me money and stuff. And I remember I wanted to go buy a half gallon of vodka that night, and the store that I went to didn't sell hard liquor. They sold beer. So what I did was I drank two beers every hour to that next morning to help me get through my withdrawals. Because if I would have bought a half gallon of vodka, I would have never made that phone call the next morning. I know in my heart of hearts. So I made that phone call the next morning. I called a Pittsburgh detox. And when I went out there, they told me, you know, Dave, since you're really close of getting into the program, you can stay here until they come and get you. And I said, okay. And I ended up staying in that detox for 25 days. And then the program finally came and got me. You know, and they say how it works is to be honest, open, and willing. And I don't know where it came from, but the open and the willingness was there. The honesty part came a little bit later. You know, and what I mean by that, when I went out there, they said, you know, because this is going to be my third time at this one particular treatment. They said, Dave, if you're going to be here, we want you to do this, and this. And what came out of my mouth was okay, 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 and okay. Because before, when I would, you know, and basically what they were saying the same thing that they were saying every single time I went into a program, which was, Dave, if you're going to be here, we want you to go to meetings, we want you to get a big book, we want you to get a sponsor, and we want you to work the steps. And the way I used to process that before would be, okay, let me think about that one, and I don't need to do that one. You know, and I kept getting what I was getting. You know, I kept getting what I was getting. You know, and then at this point, too, I got to say, gosh, I had such an overwhelming fear of people. Every single time I was in a program, I'd be there for anywhere between 30 days and 90 days, and you wouldn't even know that I was there. Because I always sat in the back, never said a word to anybody. You know, and I remember the second day that I was there, I walked into the dining room the next morning because they had a big meeting there in the morning, and I truly believe God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, because when I walked into that dining room, there I was heading to the back of the rooms, and what I noticed was all the chairs were taken in the back of the room except for one. And it was way up in front. And I could swear there was this shining light shining down on his chair. And something, it was not me, something carried me to that chair. And every single morning that they had the meetings, I would walk into the dining room and that chair was always open. And every morning I would walk in and sit in that chair. Then I just started doing some really crazy things, like I started raising my hand and talking at the meetings. I started talking to the counselors there. I started talking to the other residents there. And what was happening for me was, throughout my whole life, I had built this invisible wall around me, this wall of fear and distrust. And the only time that wall would ever come down was when I was under the influence of alcohol. You know, and every single time I raised my hand up, I talked to a counselor, just a little piece of that wall would start coming down. little piece of that wall would start coming down, a little piece of that wall would start coming down. And then all of a sudden, what was happening was I was letting people into my life and letting myself into other people's lives. You know, and then I truly believe that we're all in some shape, way, or form blessed with a moment of clarity. And my moment of clarity came when I was reading in the big book on chapter 3 about more about alcoholism. And when I read this, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And what it talked about was that the idea that someday, somehow, we'll be able to enjoy and control our drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and many pursue it at the gates of insanity or death. When I read that, it was like, boom, I can clearly see what was going on the previous 6 years of my life. That every single time I was in a detox or program or something, I'd go through these severe 3 to 5 day withdrawals. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling better, and it was always this thought in my mind, Dave, it's going to be different. Dave, it's going to be different. And I truly believed it in my heart that it was going to be different. And what I couldn't see was that every single time I picked up that first drink, I was off and running again. And that next paragraph said that we had to concede our innermost selves that were real alcoholics. And for the first time in my life, I finally admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And the biggest difference for me was it went from here to here. And from that point, recovery started for me. You know, everything just started flowing for me at that point, you know. I remember one day one of the counselors said that I had to unlearn everything that I learned and apply a new way of living. And when I heard that, I go, wow, that sounded great. I had no idea what it meant, but it sure sounded great until I did a fourth and fifth step. You know, when I did my fourth step, you know, because throughout my whole life, it was everybody else's fault. Your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault. And I had no responsibility in anything. You know, when I did my fourth step and told that to another person, I can clearly see, you know, we've talked about how I was selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, dishonest, and full of fear. And I realized this is what I have to unlearn. And this is what I have to learn is to be honest, is to be, you know, selfless, is not to have the world revolve around me. You know, and of course I thought I was gonna get that in about 2 weeks, but it took a while. You know, and it's still going on. You know, and so what happened for me was, you know, and I had gotten a sponsor, you know, what happened for me those 4 months that I was out there was I had built the foundation for recovery. And I carried that with me when I left there. And I started renting rooms at places, you know, places close to the Concord Fellowship and places close to BART because I didn't have a driver's license. I never had a driver's license throughout my whole life because I've always had this fear of driving. And thank God I didn't have a driver's license because if my head would have told me it was okay to drink, it definitely would have told me it was okay to drink and drive. You know, and so I was just going to lots of meetings, you know. I'd gotten my job back at the ball games. If it was a day game, I was at the morning meeting and the night meeting. If it was a night game, I was at the morning meeting and the noon meeting. You know, and back then the Concord Fellowship was open every day. And what we did was we played cards every day in between meetings. You know, and I needed that. I had nowhere to go. I needed that fellowship, you know, to hang out with sober guys and just, you know, playing cards all the time. You know, and then it was about 7 years sober. A lot of stuff from my childhood started coming up. A lot of, you know, the emotional and physical abuse that I grew up with started coming up. And at that point, that's when I came into Al-Anon. And I sought outside help, too. You know, and what happened for me at that point was I went through a year of what felt like a year of grief for that little boy that grew up in that home. You know, there was a lot of sadness that was surfacing. I'd be crying and crying and crying. And what I didn't know was there was a lot of anger down there, too. And all that anger started coming up. And, you know, one day I was driving home from a friend's house in Sacramento, and the floodgates were just open. I was just crying, crying and crying and crying. You know, I kept thinking, where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? And every single time I thought about my dad, I just started crying and crying and crying and crying. And this has been one of the greatest gifts that I've gotten in recovery. You know, and all of a sudden, in this moment, I felt forgiveness like I never felt before for another human being. All this fear and resentment that I felt around my dad turned into love and compassion. You know, and because I realized at that point, my dad drinks because he hurts. And, you know, and for the first 7 years of my sobriety, I knew in my head that my dad did the best that he knew how. In that moment, I knew in my heart that my dad did the best that he knew how. And because of that, I was able to have this amazing love affair with this man for the next 18 years of his life until he passed away 2 years ago. And, you know, it was just amazing. You know, we started doing things like, you know, we never went anywhere. We never did anything when we were growing up and stuff. So, you know, I go to Hawaii every year, and I go to Mexico in the off season too. You know, I thought, you know, I'm going to take my dad on a trip. I've never been on a trip with my dad. He loves Mexico. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna take him to Mexico. You know, and we went to Mexico, and I got to tell you, I had the most miserable time of my life. Because I was so focused on him and his drinking, making sure he was okay, buying him booze, da-da-da-da-da, that I forgot about me. You know, 2 years later, I took him to Hawaii, and we had the most amazing, amazing time of our life. You know, and, you know, when I look back at a lot of that stuff, you know, and then I think, you know, all I did was come in to try to stop drinking. All I did was, you know, just stop the pain. You know, and I've gotten a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, a lot of other stuff has gone on in recovery. You know, like I said, I just bought a house, which is fantastic, yay, and you know, and there's also a lot of stress. But, you know, I guess, you know, one other thing that I wanted to share before I close is that, you know, about 11 years ago, I hit an emotional bottom in recovery. And it came in the form of an ending of a relationship. Now, the ending of the relationship isn't what devastated me. You know, but there was a lot of sadness around it and stuff like that. What devastated me was my dependence on this relationship. Because what was going on for me was a lot of this abandonment stuff that I had not dealt with at that point was coming up for me. You know, and I kind of knew for, you know, 16 years that it was there. I mean, it would start surfacing, was like, no, push it back down. Start surfacing, no, push it back down. You know, and when that relationship ended, it was like, okay, I know I need to deal with this. It's like, okay, God, I'm ready. I'm ready, God. Let's deal with this. I'll give it 2 weeks. you know, and little did I know it was going to be a lot longer than that. There was a lot of healing around that, and it took a long time. But you know, it's amazing, you know, that once again, all I did was come in and try to stop drinking. You know, and I remember during that process, there was a lot of 3 o'clock in the morning wake ups, curled up in a ball, crying, you know, and it would be like, God, I can't do this. I can't do this. And this little voice would come in, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. It would give me a little bit of hope. God, I can't do this. You know, it would carry me. And the pain was so devastating. God, I can't do this. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. Oh, shut up. Just leave me alone. Jeez. And then I heard the voice that I really needed to hear, which was, Dave, I need you to walk through this so you can help other people down the road. You know, in the big book, it talks about we will see how our experience will benefit others. You know, and I knew I needed to walk through this. I knew that God was with me. You know, and one day I was working out at the Giants game and still in this deep, deep pain, You know, and I was doing a souvenir stand outside the stadium. You know, and I'm in this pain and I'm thinking, you know, I just need to get home. You know, and so the game started. I closed the souvenir stand. I pushed it in, you know, and I'm going out to my car. And I get out to my car, and my car has a flat tire. Now, normally a flat tire wouldn't be a big deal. But in place that I was at, it felt like the end of the world. So I call up AAA. AAA comes out, fix the tire, and the whole time I'm praying, God, I need a sign. Give me some kind of sign, God. I need some kind of sign. You know, just give me a sign that you're there, God. You know, they fix the flat tire. I get in the car. I get on to the Bay Bridge. I'm starting to go over the bridge. Oh, God, just give me some kind of sign. I just need a sign, God. So I'm going over the bridge, and God, just give me some kind of sign. I'm coming down off the bridge, and all of a sudden I look up, and there's this big neon flashing sign, and it says, believe. Like, oh my gosh, God, wow, wow. Little did I know that was for the Warriors when they were going through their belief stage. But it was a personal thing from God for me, you know? And so the thing about that too is that it didn't take away the pain, because that was going to be a process that I was going to have to walk through. But what it did do was it gave me hope. It gave me hope, you know, and that God is walking with me. You know, and I'm just going to end with this last one too. You know, if you're in a place of darkness or something, you know, because sobriety, you know, recovery isn't all, you know, there's been a lot of darkness, you know, and a lot of healing deep down inside, you know, and it's through that healing deep down inside where sometimes it feels like darkness, but it's not. You know, it's not. It's just God just healing those wounds. Because what happens if I don't heal those wounds? I live my life from those wounds. You know, and I don't want to live my life from those wounds anymore, because I keep, the behavior is just yucky. It's yucky. So God comes in and starts healing these wounds, you know. And about 5 years ago, you know, God was in there doing some healing and stuff, you know. And I was just feeling this overwhelming sense of loneliness. You know, and it wasn't like, well, go be with people and stuff, or go be of service, you know, or, you know, gosh, I'm among thousands of people every day at work, you know, and I have tons of friends, they're all in recovery and everything, because this was coming from another level. It was coming from a deeper level, you know, and once again, you know, I'm on the freeway, driving to work, the Giants game, and I'm praying, God, give me a sign. Help me with my loneliness, God. Just help me with my loneliness, God. Just give me some kind of sign, you know. And I'm in a stand that day, you know. Just give me some kind of sign. Help me with my loneliness, you know. And a friend had texted me. She said, "Dave, how you doing?" And I'm just texting her back. I'm just feeling this overwhelming sense of loneliness, and just about when I'm ready to press send, these two young girls come up to the souvenir stand. So I put the phone down. "Can I help you?" Yeah, can we see this hat and this shirt and everything? Yeah, sure. But on the corner of my eye, this girl has a tattoo on her arm. I have never, ever asked anybody what their tattoo says. And I asked her, "What did your tattoo say?" She turned over her arm and it said, "You are not alone." Like, oh my gosh, God, wow. I showed them the text and we're like, hallelujah, woo. And, you know, it's just a thing. I got to tell you, the greatest gift that I've gotten in recovery has been a relationship with God, has been my relationship with God. You know, I still kind of screw it up with self-reliance, you know, but then that just guides me over. God, I need you. God, I need you. And there's so much strength in the power of prayer, in the power of prayer. You know, at 30 days, about 50 days sober, at that program that I was at, some guy came up to me and gave me this little 24-hour meditation book. The next morning, I started waking up at 5:30 in the morning reading this meditation book. I have not missed a day in almost 27 and a half years. I've woken up 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning reading some sort of meditation book, doing some sort of meditation. You know, I go to sleep. A few years ago, I found, you know, going to sleep, listening to meditation on my phone. You know, you can find Google meditation on fill in the blank, whatever. I mean, millions of things. you know. And for me, you know, I like meditation on God's love, you know, because when I'm in here, you know, when I'm in here and not up here, amazing things happen. Amazing things happen, you know, and what I know too is that in recovery, I've lived my life from two places. I've lived my life from a place of scarcity, where I'm not enough, I don't have enough, I don't do enough, and so I'm grabbing for things, people, places, things, whatever it is to fill me because I'm not feeling enough. And I've also lived my life plenty of times from a place of abundance. And that abundance feels like I am enough, I have enough, I do enough, and it just wants to flow this way. Instead of flowing this way, it just flows outwardly. Where can I be of service? Where can I be of service? You know, and once again, all I came in here was try to quit drinking, and I've been blessed with a life beyond my wildest dreams. Thank you.